We won't wait. Make the GM wait any longer. Mr. Feaster, how are you?
I'm just great, guys. How's it going?
We're doing okay.
We're on location, and it's immensely busy, but I can't imagine where you're at. You guys have three picks in the first round. There's RFA stuff and all this tight, compressed schedule with a short season. How busy has it been for you?
Well, we've been at it since the end of the season, certainly. We had our organizational meetings, and we had the combined coaching staffs from Calgary and Abbotsford come in here, and we reviewed every player in the organization and evaluated every player. And then we had our spring amateur scouting meetings, and we refined and revised our list. We scouted the combine or the Memorial Cup, and then we had our guys go to the combine. We interviewed 60 players there, and since the end of the combine, we've been doing additional due diligence and background work on those players, and at the same time, having conversations with other teams about moving up into the top five with our pick, and also talking to teams about acquiring players via trade. So has not been a dull moment or a day off. We've been hard at it and will continue to be. We will have our pro guys go into New Jersey for the draft the 24th. We'll have pro meetings the 24th through the 26th. Our amateur guys come in the 26th, and we'll be ready for the 30th.
Man, it's quick. And then they move free agency back to July 5th, though, and it's a one-day draft instead of two. It really is compressed. I wonder where your list is at right now, Jay. And you mentioned moving up into the top five. Do you see a plateau after the five guys that I think we all have in terms of the two Mooseheads, Seth Jones, and the two Euros, that Russians that played in men's leagues last year?
Well, it's not even so much in terms of top five. Like, we've identified in the conversations we're having is that at certain spots, if the player that we want is on the board, the conversation is, if that player is on the board, would you be willing to move that pick for? That's really where it is. We think it's a deep draft. We think that certainly at number six that we're going to get a very, very good player. We're going to get a player, as I said, we're going to take the best player available at six, and we're going to do that with an eye toward that player coming in here to camp in 2013 and trying to compete for a spot on the team. So we feel very good about the draft. We feel good about our spot at six. But at the same time, when you have those three first-round picks, if we can improve our position, we would look to avail ourselves of that as well.
It's a fascinating draft, and a lot of scouts are saying this could be almost as deep as that one. I believe it was 04, the FNUF draft, and the one where you had guys like Getzlaff going in the middle of the first round. Do you see it as a historically deep one?
Well, I suppose that's one you have to wait for the historians to write as to whether or not it's a historically deep one. But again, we not only feel good about the player we're going to get at six, but we feel good about the players that we'll get at 22 and 28. I mean, I really do believe that it is a deep draft. There's a lot of talent in this draft. There's a lot of character in this draft. A lot of good players at various positions. And so from our perspective, having three in the first and having nine picks overall, we're excited about it.
Jay, can you give us a sense? I guess a lot of people are just so fascinated with how the whole thing works for you guys. Can you give us a sense of how it does work? Are you guys all sitting down at a table together? Are you, you have your list with your scouts, and ultimately, we can assume that it will be your decision on the ultimate selections here in the first round. Is that correct?
Yeah. The way the process works, though, is that it's a participatory process, that we have our scouts obviously go out, and we have our criteria, what it is that we want our scouts to grade a player on, and they put those grades in. And then we started off at the midwinter meeting, and then we follow it up again in spring meeting. And what happens is that Todd Button, as our director of amateur scouting, he will lead the group and say, okay, who's your first guy? And we'll put that first guy in, and okay, how do we grade him on each of these criteria? And then we'll do that. And then go to the next scout and say, okay, who's your first guy? Or actually, even what we do on that is we'll say, okay, who else has seen this player? And so all the guys have seen the player weigh in. And then who's your next guy? And then literally, once you get five of those guys on the board, you say, okay, now let's properly order them. And a lot of challenges on that, a lot of questions on that. Why is that guy ahead of this guy? How come that guy moved? You have extensive discussions. And then once you get that list, I mean, ultimately, and you'll continue to do it, okay, are we set on the order of the first five? How about 6 to 10? And then you go right on through that. And then we'll layer in over top of that the decision lens process, where we'll take the raw data and you remove any emotion and you remove any outside influences from it, just the raw scores, and we'll run what would the list look like if you just went based on the raw data. And then we'll look at it again and say, well, now why is that guy number one in our manual list? The raw data says he ought to be four, or whatever the case may be. And that's a process that continues the refining of the list. I'll tell you, the first draft that I presided over here in 2011, we literally right up until, you know, it was a few hours before we had to go to the floor of the draft, where we actually switched a priority order. You know, we had one guy at six and another guy at seven, and we said, you know what, based on everything we've looked at, we think that we ought to flip them. And so that's really how the process plays out. There's a lot of questioning. John Weisbrod will question, why are we even thinking about that guy there? Is that a guy that we could have later? All those discussions take place as we lead up into it.
Can you give me another sense of the criteria that you rank in terms of the type of player you're looking at? I know I'm asking maybe a lot, but maybe just from what you're looking at.
Yeah,
from...
I mean, one of the big things that we want to see, and it's one of the things that John Weisbrod brought into the organization, is that, you know, we've done the analysis, we've done the studies, and John has looked at it, that, you know, when teams make mistakes, and especially when you make mistakes in the first round, a lot of times you'll do it on the basis of size or you'll do it on the basis of skating. And certainly, you know, when I was in Tampa prior to my becoming GM, there was a belief that that was the mantra, was size and speed, size and speed. And, you know, we believe that if you're an okay skater, we can help you improve your skating. There are ways to help you become a better skater. But if you don't have hockey sense, it's very difficult to put that in you. And so that's one of the things we look for, is where is a player's hockey sense? We want to evaluate a player's character, and by that's everything from work ethic to compete to, you know, is this a player who he takes the outcome of a game personally, even if he wasn't the person responsible for it being a successful outcome or not a successful outcome? Obviously, we want to look at their skill, we want to evaluate their skill, and we want to evaluate their skating as well. So those are just some of the things that go into the process for us.
Flames general manager Jay Feaster joining us on the line today. You know, it's a historic draft, as we mentioned, and I would imagine that at this point, Jay, you're getting that much closer, aren't you? I mean, you've probably got a target, at least at this point. If you weren't able to move up or move down, whatever it is, you do have a couple of guys in mind right now.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, in terms of where we are, we, you know, the very upper end of our list hasn't materially changed really since, I would say, the midwinter meet. Like, we have a real good handle on what we think the order should be, what it is for us, and no question that we're not sitting here vacillating or saying, boy, we're just not sure. You know, part of the process is that we do this all the time. We play out the mock drafts. We try to get as much information and intelligence, and you try to sift through what is smokescreen and what is misdirection, and you try to go through it and say, okay, here's how we think it's going to go. Here are the players that we believe are going to be on the board at six, and you know, from that perspective, we're ready to go. We would be ready, candidly, if the draft were, you know, were on Monday, we'd be ready to go.
Jay, I wonder about what you think of drafting a Russian, because Nikushkin is an awfully tantalizing set of skills, but the franchise has not drafted a Russian by my calculation since 2002, and they drafted five between 01 and 02 that really didn't pan out. And you clearly weren't part of the organization at that point, but is there a bitter taste in the mouth, or is there at least just some leeriness about going after the Russians, given, you know, the threat of the KHL and a kid maybe not coming over?
Well, certainly in the case of, if you know that you're talking, that's one of the things we ask every one of the players that we interview, whether it's at the combine or in our, you know, our scouts one-on-one interviews, we want to know if in fact they have commitments, and not just in the KHL, but, you know, are they under contract in Europe, or what is their status, and so that's clearly something that you want to take into account. Unlike the other federations internationally, the National Hockey League does not have a transfer agreement in place with the Russian Federation or with the KHL. The KHL and the NHL do have a working relationship and a respecting of players' registered contracts now, so that in the case of the player that you're talking about, you know, we were actually able to, the National Hockey League made an inquiry of the KHL and sent notice to all the member clubs that, in fact, the player is free to sign an NHL contract. He's not under a contractual obligation right now in the KHL. So, you know, those are things that you want to do your homework and your due diligence. In terms of a bad taste in the mouth or anything, I honestly believe that as an organization, you can't, you know, you can't say, well, we're never going to do this or we're never going to do that. You can't set up a part of the world and say, well, we'll never do that, or, you know, we'll only take guys that are 6 foot two or bigger. And, you know what I mean? It just, it puts artificial restraints on that I don't think are healthy for you as a club when you're drafting. But clearly, you're right, Ryan, that you have to identify what are those risk factors. And the KHL, as we all know, it does throw another wrinkle into the evaluation process.
We spoke with Nick Patan, I believe, on Monday or Tuesday, and he was in town chatting with your management team. I wonder how many one-on-ones you've done like that, and if you're talking to a lot of forwards, because at six, I don't know if you avoid position because the guy could show up so soon in the organization.
Well, again, you know, it's kind of interesting as to how it became out there in the public as to who we talked to in the person of Nick Patan. I had to chuckle at that. That's not something that otherwise we would be releasing or talking about. We, you know, we don't think that there's necessarily a competitive advantage for us to talk about it.
Sure.
You know, everybody's trying, as I said earlier, we're all trying to figure out the bits and pieces and snippets of intelligence that you can get from other markets and what other teams might be looking to do. As you very well know, I mean, you can look at our depth chart and you see areas where we don't have a lot of players in the system. You know, up front, we certainly always have a need at the center ice position. We don't have a lot of depth prospects right now at the right wing position. We don't have a lot of right shot D. There are really, again, you can look at it and we're wide open as far as by position.
What comes next for you, Jay, right now? I mean, I understand you could be you're off to Boston. Is that right, to meet with other general managers?
Yes, yeah, we have our general managers meetings. I'm going to do a little bit more due diligence on a couple of players before that time, and then head into Boston for the GM's meetings. And certainly every conversation we have with general managers right now, as we're talking trade or if it's moving up or whatever the case may be, you know, typically those conversations end with one party or the other saying, well, I'll make it a point to talk to you in Boston about that. So, you know, you get the chance to advance some of those discussions, and we'll go in there. And then, like I said, coming out of there, we'll have even more information and more things to consider. And then a week from, on Monday, a week from Monday, we'll be heading into New Jersey. We'll have our pro scouts in there so that by midweek, probably by the Wednesday, the 26th, we'll have our UFA priority list finalized that we'll have our game plan in place at that time for July 5th.
Just a thought on TJ Brody. We've had a lot of great conversation this week on the radio, Jay, around him because of some other guys that had some similarities being signed. How do you view the RFA status of Brody? Obviously, there's those short-term bridge contracts like we've seen with PK Subban, and then there's what the Predators did, which is probably pay a little more now, hoping that you'll get value later. I wonder how you approach TJ Brody this summer.
Well, the approach certainly will be that we intend to get him signed, and as I was saying earlier today, the good news from our perspective is that because we have plenty of cap space, you know, we will enter into negotiations recognizing that, you know, we're not going to be concerned about a Group 2 offer sheet. We have the wherewithal that we could match anything. So, you know, from that perspective, don't have to worry about that. But what it does, we do intend to get TJ re-signed.
How about a thought on Michael Backlund as well, Jay, if you could?
Yeah, for sure. Backlund's a guy we want to get re-signed. Certainly talked earlier, too, about Chris Butler. What makes both Backlund and Butler a little bit interesting or more unique, I guess, is the fact that, you know, each of those players, they have salary arbitration rights. So that's something that, in addition to the normal trying to negotiate an agreement, there's also that mechanism that's available to those two, whereas a player in TJ Brody's status right now as a restricted free agent, he is not yet salary arbitration eligible. But our plan is to get all three guys signed.
The Vancouver Canucks announced today, Jay, that they're moving that Peoria franchise that they purchased into Utica, New York. Does this have implications long-term in Abbotsford? Because I know you guys had stepped aside and allowed the city of Abbotsford to chat with Vancouver. That was well-publicized. They couldn't come to terms, but is that necessarily dead in the water long-term?
Well, again, as far as long-term, I don't know. That's really an issue that's at the Ken King and ownership level. It's probably not... It's not my place to talk about what ownership or Ken would be thinking long term, but I can tell you that from a hockey operations perspective and in all of my conversations with Ken, we like it in Abbotsford. It's a good situation for us. Our players are very close. We're able to get our staff in there to see the players, to work with players on the ice. It's a great community. We like the people. Our players are treated very well. And we continue to try to make inroads on the ticket sales side of it. Ryan Walter in there doing good work for us. So from the standpoint of the Calgary Flames, no issues, no problems in Abbotsford.
We appreciate you sharing some time with us today, Jay. Just a couple quick ones. Some great news on John Gillies, your netminder at Providence, who had such a sensational freshman year. He's one of, I think, four netminders that the U.S. Program is going to bring in with regards to next year's World Juniors. That's got to be exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting, and it's one of the things that, quite honestly, after this year's World Juniors, where he served as a backup for the Team USA, you know, we made that clear to him that's nice that you were the backup and you want to go medal and we're proud of you and we're happy for you. I think it was a great experience, but, you know, we expect you to be the starter next year. And you know, that's one of the things that we challenge all of our guys with, that we want them to have those ambitions and we want them to set those goals. And so we're very pleased with his first year, and we are, you know, we're happy with him and anxious to see him in development camp here in Calgary in mid-July.
Jay, have you allowed yourself any time to watch any of the Stanley Cup Finals? And if so, what's your take on it?
Yeah, for sure I have, for sure. Obviously follow it. I'm a fan of the game, and I do watch it, and I do enjoy it. I have to admit I didn't stay up for triple overtime in Game 1 because I had some early meetings that I knew that wasn't going to work. But it's been great hockey. It's, again, you see the physicality at play. It's something we've talked about, and you know, some people say it's copycat or whatever, but the reality of it is that, you know, we have to get bigger and we have to get stronger and harder to play against. You look at the battles that are taking place out there now, and it's been in both the Eastern and Western Conference and now in the finals, and you know, that's something we want to try to address this offseason. We want to get bigger and we want to compete with those elite teams.
Well, Jay, listen, we appreciate your time today, and we wish you the best of luck at the upcoming draft. Obviously, everybody in this city and every hockey fan will be keeping an eye on what the Calgary Flames do. Best of luck down there, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you
very much.